27. Bad lady. The woman must have gotten in sometime after midnight, she figured later, because it was after Pryor came back with the crabs, the second bag of crabs. They really did have some good crabs in Baltimore, and coming off a run always gave her an appetite, so she'd talked him into going back for some more. Gerald kept coming in to change the derms on her arms. She'd give him her best goofy smile every time, squish the trank out of them when he'd gone, and then stick them back on. Finally, Gerald said she should get some sleep. He put out the lights and turned down the fake window to its lowest setting, a blood-red sunset. When she was alone again, she slid her hand between the bed and the wall, found the shock rod in its hole in the foam. She fell asleep without meaning to, the red glow of the window like a sunset in Miami, and she must have dreamed of Eddie, or anyway of Hooky Greens, dancing with somebody up there on the 33rd floor, because when the crash woke her, she wasn't sure where she was, but she had this very clear map of the way out of Hooky Greens, like she knew she'd better take the stairs because there must be some kind of trouble. She was half out of bed when Pryor came through the door, like really through it, because it was still shut when he hit it. He came through it backward, and it just went to splinters and honeycombed chunks of cardboard. She saw him hit the wall, and then the floor, and then he wasn't moving anymore, and someone else was there in the doorway, backlit from the other room, and all she could see of the face were these two curves of reflected red light from that fake sunset. Pulled her legs back into bed and sank back against the wall, her hand sliding down to, "Don't move, bitch!" There was something real scary about that voice, because it was too fucking cheerful, like throwing Pryor through that door had been kind of a treat. I mean, really, don't move. And the woman was across the room in three strides, very close, so close that Mona felt the cold coming off the leather of the woman's jacket. "Okay," Mona said. "Okay." Then hands grabbed her, fast, and she was flat on her back, shoulders pressed down hard into the foam, and something, the shock rod, was right in front of her face. "Where'd you get this little thing?" "Oh," Mona said, like it was something she might have seen once but forgotten about. "It was in my boyfriend's jacket. I borrowed his jacket." Mona's heart was pounding. There was something about those glasses. "Did Shithead know you had this little thing?" "Who?" "Pryor," the woman said, and let go of her, turning. Then she was kicking him, kicking Pryor over and over, hard. "No," she said, stopping as abruptly as she'd begun. "I don't think Pryor knew." Then Gerald was in the doorway, just like nothing had happened, except he was looking ruefully at the part of the door that was still on the frame, rubbing his thumb over an edge of splintered laminate. "Coffee, Molly?" "Two coffees, Gerald," the woman said, examining the shock rod. "Mine's black." Mona sipped her coffee and studied the woman's clothes and hair while they waited for Pryor to wake up. At least, that's what they seemed to be doing. Gerald was gone again. She wasn't much like anybody Mona'd seen before. Mona couldn't place her on the style map at all, except she must have had some money. The hair was European. Mona'd seen it like that in a magazine. She was pretty sure it wasn't this season's style anywhere, but it went okay with the glasses, which were insets, planted right in the skin. Mona'd seen a cabbie in Cleveland had those. And she wore this short jacket, very dark brown, too plain for Mona's taste, but obviously new, with a big white sheepskin collar, open now over a weird green thing trussed across her breasts and stomach like armor, which was what Mona figured it probably was, and jeans cut from some kind of gray-green mossy suede, thick and soft, and Mona thought they were the best thing about her outfit. She could have gone for a pair of those herself, except the boots spoiled them. These knee-high black boots, the kind bike racers wore, with thick yellow rubber soles and big straps across the insteps, chrome buckles all up and down, horrible clunky toes. And where'd she get that nail color, that burgundy? Mona didn't think they even made that anymore. "What the hell are you looking at?"
Your boots."
"So?"
"They don't make it with your pants."
"Wore 'em to kick the shit out of Pryor." Pryor moaned on the floor and started trying to throw up. It made Mona feel kind of sick herself, so she said she was going to go to the bathroom. "Don't try to leave." The woman seemed to be watching Pryor over the rim of her white china cup, but with those glasses it was hard to be sure. Somehow she found herself in the bathroom with her purse on her lap. She hurried, getting the hit together, didn't grind it fine enough, so it burned the back of her throat. But like Lynette used to say, you don't always have time for the niceties. And anyway, wasn't that all a lot better now? There was a little shower in Gerald's bathroom, but it looked like it hadn't been used for a long time. She took a closer look and saw gray mold growing around the drain, and spots that looked like dried blood. When she came back, the woman was dragging Pryor into one of the other rooms, pulling him by his feet. He had socks on, no shoes, Mona noticed now, like maybe he'd had his feet up to sleep. His blue shirt had blood on it, and his face was all bruised. What Mona felt, as the rush kicked in, was a bright and innocent curiosity. "What are you doing?" "I think I'll have to wake him up," the woman said, like she was on the subway, talking about another passenger who was about to miss his stop. Mona followed her into the room where Gerald did his work, everything clean and hospital white. She watched as the woman got Pryor up into a sort of chair, like in a salon, with levers and buttons and things. "It isn't like she's that strong," Mona thought. "It's like she knows which way to throw the weight." Pryor's head fell to the side as the woman fastened a black strap across his chest. Mona was starting to feel sorry for him, but then she remembered Eddie. "What is it?" The woman was filling a white plastic container with water from a chrome tap. Mona just kept trying to say it, feeling her heart race out of control on the whiz. "He killed Eddie," she kept trying to say, but it wouldn't come out. But then it must have, because the woman said, "Yeah, he'll do that sort of thing, if you let him." She threw the water over Pryor, into his face and all down his shirt. His eyes snapped open, and the white of the left one was solid red. The metal prongs of the shock rod snapped white sparks when the woman pressed it against the wet blue shirt. Pryor screamed. Gerald had to get down on his hands and knees to pull her out from under the bed. He had cool, very gentle hands. She couldn't remember how she'd gotten under there, but now everything was quiet. Gerald had on a gray topcoat and dark glasses. "You're going with Molly now, Mona," he said. She started to shake. "I think I'd better give you something for your nerves." She jerked back out of his grip. "No! Don't fucking touch me!" "Leave it, Gerald," the woman said from the door. "It's time you go now." "I don't think you know what you're doing," he said, "but good luck." "Thanks." "Think you'll miss the place?" "No. I was going to retire soon anyway." "So was I," the woman said. And then Gerald left, without even a nod for Mona. "Got any clothes?" the woman asked Mona. "Get 'em on. We're leaving, too." Dressing, Mona found she couldn't button her dress over her new breasts, so she left it open, putting Michael's jacket on and zipping it up to her chin.